So can we briefly summarize what we discussed last class? We covered like 24, 25, 26. Yeah. So these are still the symptoms of the person who self-realized, who has seen the super soul, right? 24. Talk about Brahmaputta. Anybody?
Within and is satisfied, does not need external attachments and material.
Yeah, so that's why, you know, we don't need external things to make us happy. That's why Prabhupada says in the purport, a liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. So it's in enjoying by his own experience internally. So text number 25. Busy working for the welfare of all living beings. So we talked about that quite a bit, right?
Right. Only so, a person in Krishna consciousness can help other people. A person who is not in Krishna consciousness, will only be able to help other people on material plane.
Okay. So, what is the real help a Krishna conscious person should do to the others? What type of help?
Giving them also.
So, connecting them back to Krishna and giving them Krishna consciousness. So, at our stage, what does it mean to execute this being well? You know, how do we do welfare to all other living beings? Now, can we go and, you know, so go outside and start bringing people to Krishna consciousness? We are ready at that, like Prabhupada. Can we do it like that, or what does it mean to us? We talked about that, right?
Depending on ourselves.
Improving ourselves in Krishna consciousness.
So basically, if we are rigid about practices of Krishna consciousness at our stage right now, that is actually, we are doing welfare for all living beings, because eventually, that's what we will do. Because this, we are following the path so strictly. So by that we will become pure, so eventually Krishna will give us intelligence and make us as an instrument to help others accordingly, right? So at our stage, we just have to be strict and rigid about our practices of Krishna consciousness. So we talked about how we can practically improve our chanting. I heard some people have taken it up and seen some improvement. So has anybody took any steps towards improving their chanting last week?
Okay, started chanting morning.
More rounds in the morning.
More rounds in the morning.
So how did you feel?
Good, Mother. Like earlier, what I used to do, after coming back, meetings, everything, then I was sleepy, but I have to complete my rounds I have to do. But now, like, she is waking me up early, so I'm having enough time to first do my chant. So it's very good.
It's very good. So you feel work is much smoother now?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? I heard Praveen Prabhu was doing. You want to share for him? No. Praveen Prabhu is saying he's getting up in the morning and chanting, no?
But I don't know what he's experiencing.
Oh, okay. So anybody else?
I tried one or two days, like first day I was very successful, but second day onwards work came back.
Oh, yeah.
I had to work Saturday, Sunday. So now again, this week I'm back.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah, your work, this it's on the deadline and all is there, right? Prabhu, Amit Prabhu.
I started waking up early and attended once Mangalarti this weekend also.
Very nice. So, Mami Prabhu has started attending Mangalati on Sunday because it's much more convenient.
Tomorrow I will also try Saturday, Sunday.
Saturday, Sunday. Very nice. Very nice. Prabhu, you did something?
No, not continuing what I did.
Continue. You're already doing it at proper this thing. So, that's very nice.
If we do the chanting, we will start the day. That's helpful.
That's helpful.
Get done and then like.
So you always chant your round before you start cooking and all.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
To. And if I can't, if I have to get make food for him before he after for him to go to work after as soon as he goes, I go and finish.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah.
I am in the way.
On the way of improving your chanting.
Oh, her chanting.
Improving her chanting.
No, he's saying I'm in the way. Period.
Okay. Got it. That's okay. It's her duties. Oh, that's so, I'm so happy that, you know, we could be of some help in your journey, in your Krishna consciousness.
Before I would do like 2 rounds like that and it would be a bit tired, you know, 4 rounds, and even if I do, on occasion I do the whole thing and it's, I'm able to sit in the bed.
Very nice. Wow. Yeah, it's tough initially, but once you get the taste and you're able to do it, you don't want to lose that, you know, that time always. Like,
but
you know, always
my mind is always not on it. Like it goes, then bring it back. And then
yeah.
It goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the struggle we have to do. Okay. So then, so we are all working for welfare of all living beings. It's very nice. So text number 26. Free from anger and all material desires, constantly endeavoring for perfection. You know, Krishna here promises that, you know, it may sound so difficult, liberation, right? In the earlier 2 verses, you know, all these qualities, so difficult. But Krishna is promising, like, you know, in very near future, you will attain liberation. Because of what? Constantly endeavoring for perfection. That's the key. Even if we are not self-realized, self-disciplined, free from anger, material desires, you know, all this list is, you know, so, you know, difficult to achieve. But if we are constantly endeavoring for perfection, you know, the goal is available in the near future. Because why? Because of Krishna's mercy. Right? Because our endeavor is there and we have Krishna's mercy, then we can, that's how we succeed. So actually, I wanted to share a personal thing which was I was experiencing these last 2 weeks. So gradually now our kids are like now 16 months, right? Like one year and 4 months done already. Slowly we are noticing they have been getting up twice in the night to drink milk. Earlier it was like, you know, they want milk, otherwise they will not sleep. So now Maharati, I was talking about Maharati, he is very simple. He used to just drink milk and immediately go to sleep. Narasimha, it was tough because sometimes he wakes up too much and you have to spend 1 hour trying to put him to sleep in the night, and it was tough. But Maharati was very simple, easy. So gradually I noticed that he's changing his pattern. Now, you know, slowly he started behaving like, you know, he doesn't drink. He's hungry, but he doesn't drink when he's awake. So I have to put him to rest and feed him in the sleep. So then, you know, I should spend like 20 minutes or 30 minutes to put him to rest. And because he's hungry, he cannot even sleep also. That takes even longer. And then heat up milk and feed him. By the time, suppose he's still not fully sleepy, again he'll do the same thing. Again I have to go through the whole cycle. So last 2 weeks, I think I was struggling with this thing. And last 2-3 days, he came to the point that actually in sleep also he doesn't want to drink. So he understands that I'm giving milk, he's completely rejecting. And 2-3 days back, actually he has fever even more worse, completely. So for a few days, almost like pretty much night, no sleep at all, I was like completely gone case. So it came to the point like a frustrated, or rather, you know, very unable to handle. I tried so many ways. We have to use our intelligence, right? Okay, I thought I'll put alarm so I'll wake up before he becomes hungry. So the sleep before he, so that I don't have to put him to sleep, right? He's in sleeping already, so he's about to get hungry. So I'll feed. That also I tried. By the time I go to feed milk, he's ready to awake for hunger. So I have to go through the whole process. So I tried so many things. Every time it was getting frustrated. So one day I just cried, you know, Krishna, you have to help me. If it's like this, I cannot sustain whatever services I am doing. And whole day again I have to be with them. It's not that I get so much time, daytime to sleep. So I just prayed, you know, just show me a way. This doesn't going to work. So I was crying in the night. So Prabhu was hearing, and then we all sleep together in one room. So then Prabhu said, you know, he suggested like, just leave it. He doesn't want to drink milk, it's obvious. So just leave it. No, just try to tap him and see if he can go to sleep. That's what he wants to do. So let's help him. So I think very next day we did, that worked smoothly. Now I could sleep actually more number of hours. I don't even have to get up to give milk. But I just felt like it's such a reciprocation. Otherwise I would have been stuck with that and being crazy without sleep for so many days. But somehow out of despondency, when we cried out for Krishna, somehow Krishna showed the way. So when we were talking about this Krishna's mercy, right? So I thought I'll relate with that personal, you know, thing which I was experiencing. So sometimes all Krishna wants us is, you know, for us to cry out to him. We get so busy with our duties. We know we are trying to do it for Krishna. But sometimes it's at certain level, always constant level of absorption in Krishna. But he wants more, right? So he wants to intensify the situation sometimes so that, you know, we just, okay, I cannot do this. So you have to help me out. So, okay. So we'll start today's section, 27 to 28. I'm sure many of you have the same experience, especially with children and all these things. So, especially having come to Krishna consciousness, that's a blessing for us. Because we always have a positive alternative instead of getting frustrated and, you know, having a no way to go, and it could have been very miserable. Okay. So this section, 27 to 29. It's still like towards the end of the chapter, especially 27 and 28, Krishna is going to talk about how to achieve the same supreme, like how we talked about earlier, through Ashtanga Yoga process. So earlier we talked about through Nishkama Karma Yoga or through Krishna consciousness, one can get liberated in supreme or achieve the super soul. So now for the next two verses, he's going to talk about Ashtanga Yoga, which is actually the focus of the next chapter. Sixth chapter is Dhyana Yoga, which is nothing but all this Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga is the same. All this process described in detail, things like that. But this is just giving, Krishna is giving a preview of sixth chapter in verses 27 and 28. And 29 is overall summary, and it's a very, very crucial verse. So we'll spend more time on 29. So we'll just do this 27 and 28.
So both are in one verse?
Yes, both are combined in one verse. Sparshan krutva bahir bahyans chakshus chaivartare bruvo pranapano samo krutva nasha bayam kacharinau yatendriya mano buddhir munir moksha parayana vigate cha baya krodo yasada mukta sevasa. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses and intelligence, the transcendentalist, aiming at liberation, becomes free from desire, free and fear and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So this is a very, you know, physical or Ashtanga Yoga process of how to achieve, how to withdraw ourselves from sense desires and all these things, material sense pleasures, everything, and control our, through the process of pranayama. There are six steps in this process. Prabhupada elaborates that in the purport, by which eventually the same yogi can also achieve the same destination. But Prabhupada says in the purport, this is a very, very difficult process. In this age especially, it's very tough to do it. So why do you think? Let's talk about that. You might have also, based on this process, right? What are your comments about this option? We have two options Krishna is giving, right? One is the Krishna consciousness process, and the second one is this, what we have read. So some of your comments about, you know, the compare and contrast of these two?
Second option is not an option. Not an
option, why?
Mind is wavering, and it's practically impossible to concentrate even practically for a second.
So here we are on our own trying to focus our mind, right?
Yeah. And it's hard to sit still for that long.
Yeah, in the earlier ages, in Satya Yuga and all, the yogis were able to do it. But now, especially Kali Yuga, it's full of age of disturbance, quarrel. Age of?
Iron Age. Age of
quarrel and hypocrisy.
Quarrels. I want to point out all.
Yeah, there is a verse in some of us are reading Srimad Bhagavatam together. First canto, first chapter, there's a verse which describes the shortcomings of Kali.
Short lifetime.
Quarrelsome.
Unlucky.
Misguided.
Lazy.
Yeah. And overall, always
disturbed.
So these are the qualities.
Talking about me, Masaj.
Everyone problem.
So these are, you know, they have pointed out already what are typical symptoms of Kali Yuga. This is just a preview. In 12th canto, more details are given about Kali Yuga. So it's like, you know, this is what we are facing day to day. If we feel like, you know, I am only lazy, or I am only misguided, or I am only disturbed, we should understand everybody is same actually. Because that's the effect of Kali. There's so much of sinful activities because of that. The environment is so much contaminated that there is nobody has peace of mind. So especially in this age, to follow this process is practically impractical, impossible. So some more comments.
So it's so trying to, you know, when that, when he says inward and outward breaths, and you know, trying to control the mind, it's like trying to say not to think of the pink elephant kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately your mind, you try to say mind come under control, it immediately says no, only I want to go here.
Mm-hmm.
So easier is to just keep doing stuff for the Lord, or all our senses and our mind
engaged,
are focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easier.
Mm-hmm.
So the aim is the same,
mm-hmm,
and it's much more easier than this.
It's correct. Very nice. Yes. So that's why I wanted to bring it out from all of you, so, you know, because we have heard it,
yeah,
so many times. So it's then that way you will have more conviction about what process we have been given.
So this Ashtanga Yoga, also the processes, what is Yama, Niyama, Dhyana, Dharana, all these things also, ISKCON also applies in, like in Krishna consciousness also, what you should do, what you shouldn't,
yes,
do. So
yes,
that is the Yama, Niyama,
yes,
till,
yes,
anyway it comes.
Yes.
Then like what you eat, what you shouldn't eat,
yeah,
Pratyahara, Pranam, all these things are like, it's a different way, but actually we are the,
yes,
similar way we are following.
Yes. Correct.
If you break it down to like,
yeah, we can make it like buckets and name them like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Okay, let's read a second paragraph from the Sri Prabhupada's purport.
After explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of the mysticism or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. In the sixth chapter, the subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and it, at the end of the fifth, it is only preliminarily explained.
Yeah, we can pause there, Mataji. So Prabhupada is saying, after explaining the principles of liberation through above process, which is nothing but Krishna consciousness, Krishna is now giving a different process through Ashtanga Yoga, and these are the six earlier. So, eight steps in the Ashtanga Yoga. Yama, Niyama is like, you know, rules and regulations essentially, you know, what, and then Asana is in all the asanas we do. Pranayama, the regulating the breath. Pratyahara is again withdrawing from sense objects and things like that. Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi are more and more concentrated meditation, focus on the super soul. So these,
it's
are
a combination of all of these.
Which one?
It's a combination of all these eightfold.
Yeah, yeah. I think, but they mostly go step by step. Yeah, Yama, Niyama should go together. Yeah, I think, I don't know exactly. Yeah, that's
Yama,
true.
Yama, Niyama is something we have to follow. We follow
throughout
the
this,
like,
yes.
What to do, what not to do. Because then only,
yes,
if you do the right thing throughout the
correct
day, only we can concentrate.
Correct, correct. Yeah. So these are the eightfold, means there are eight parts to that process. It's not like you go step by step. It's not like that. But Dharana, Dhyana, these things I think go gradually. It's more and more increased concentration. Samadhi is like full trance. So, okay, that's good. Okay, then we can, rest of the paragraph, Prabhupada gives more details about the Ashtanga Yoga process. So, I will leave it up to you to read. We'll go to the last paragraph.
This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the super soul in the transcendental situation. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. This will be thoroughly explained in the next chapter. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always engaged in devotional service, does not risk losing his senses to some other engagement. This is a better way of controlling the senses than by Ashtanga Yoga.
Mm. So because we already discussed, right, even a great yogi can be become tempted, like Vishwamitra and so many examples we saw. So that's why Srila Prabhupada is saying, no, we don't have that risk. See, when I asked compare and contrast, we could have said this also. You know, there is a risk of falling down. But whereas in Krishna consciousness, because, you know, we have Krishna's mercy, so there is no risk of using our senses in a lower engagement. So Prabhupada is saying Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. So we all agree to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll move on to the next verse, text number 29. This is the final verse for the fifth chapter. Any questions so far?
Papaji, when you said that if this process is fallen, there is a risk of falling down. Is it because it is difficult to attain perfection through this process, that's why there is a higher risk of falling down? Or?
Another way on, that's also there, because you know it's, we are starting with like, you know, negating everything, you know, okay, don't eat this, don't,
right,
and there is
right.
No positive help otherwise. So
it's difficult to achieve.
Yeah, so after some, it's just like, you know, when you're not in front of sensual objects, maybe it's easy, you know, you can withdraw, you know,
right.
Withhold.
Right.
But the moment you see gulab jamun, immediately you want to eat. Like, you know, becomes so difficult that way. So we are artificially controlling.
Step by step progression, and it's difficult to reach the highest level.
Yeah, it's a very artificial controlling.
Right.
The another key thing is that it's basically this a process of ascending, like we are doing on our own endeavor.
Right.
So we don't have Krishna's mercy coming from the other side. So you know, we are on our own basically. So we have this example, right, of
monkey kid and the cat. I think everyone knows.
You have
I can, one second.
Yeah. You know that, Prabhu? The monkey how it carries his babies and cat how it carries his babies.
Yeah.
So you can share them. What is this?
So which one are you talking about?
The monkey.
Basically, it's a context.
How they hold
the
kids.
So how we are.
You can share them.
Okay. So if we are trying with that yoga, then it will like a monkey kid. We have to hold ourselves to the mother.
The kid holds to the mother.
Yeah, kids hold to the mother like this yoga. We are practicing hard. But if we are other way around the Krishna consciousness, then it's like a kitten, like you. Cat is holding us, like a Krishna is...
The mother is holding the kid.
Yeah, mother is holding, so it means Krishna's mercy is doing everything for us.
Mm. So it's like, so in Krishna consciousness, we have advantage from Krishna's side. Okay, so...
in other words, mother, I'm tying to that Kali Yuga point, if you are lazy, Krishna consciousness is the easiest way.
Yeah.
You just have to do bhakti and he'll take
care of us. Yeah, and sometimes we try, and one day you just get this thing and just cry to him. That's all. We'll see, you know. Okay. Suddenly change in our life. Yeah. We should try our best.
Mataji, one question. About your experience, do you know anybody like who has been practicing Krishna consciousness and they have been able to control their... that hunger for different kind of food or anything, like are they able to control, like not to have, let's say, gulab jamun or something like that? Do you know that kind of person? Like how long does it take to go there when you don't crave for those things anymore?
No, we don't.
Okay. If it's not there, that's also okay, like that kind of
thing. Yeah, that's one thing. Yeah, that's a good point, stage to reach. But otherwise devotee is relishing prasadam. So for example, sannyasis, right? Oh, I'm assuming sannyasis have reached that stage because they live in any place or the other just for preaching, and no, wherever they go, it doesn't mean every time they get a gulab jamun or something. So whatever prasadam they get, they accept it, they are happy and they move on. Right? But at the same time, let's say if they go to a grihastha house and grihasthas, so it's a contradictory thing actually, you know. Sannyasis are supposed to be renounced, right? But then the grihasthas prepare wonderful feasts, right? So many items and so many things. So, you know, are we really spoiling, or, you know, are we giving sense gratification to them and, you know, making them come down or something, fall down? The thing is, you know, if they accept offering in our house, actually it sanctifies the whole house. That's, they are coming only to give mercy actually. If they accept the prasadam, it's just mercy. And, you know, by accepting variety of things, they are just, you know, just reciprocating with our desire to serve them. That's the only thing. It's not like, you know, now this sannyasi is ready, you know, he has a list of things he has to eat, gulab jamun, he has to eat this, he has to eat that. It's not like that. No, so what I'm saying is, the point is, they can stay without, they're not having craving, but at the same time, if it's meant to serve devotees and serve Krishna, they are willing to do it. Got it? It's not like, you know, okay, now I have to restrict my taste, so don't give me gulab jamun anymore. Then there is no exchange of love, right? So it's all about what pleases Krishna. So they are ready to do whatever pleases to Krishna. That's all.
But there is a stage, like you, it takes time, but
yeah, oh, yeah.
Eventually,
hopefully, we are praying. We'll all reach there. We also, at least to that some extent, you know, we first of all we don't have so much energy to make ourselves, so we just say, okay, I don't like gulab jamun anymore. But when we have Friday program, we have sweets, then immediately, you know, oh, I want to eat sweet. No, so to some extent, somehow we do it. So to some extent.
That way, Mataji, then what about during Gokulashtami or something where everybody is preparing the feast but they are not eating? That way, most of the temple devotees are like that already.
Yeah, they are controlling.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they are there.
Yeah. Yeah.
In one of the lecture I heard, like anyone starting Krishna consciousness for first year, they are okay, eat a lot of prasadam, okay, but
yeah,
after from second year,
they should regulate.
They have control on the prasadam as well. Like
yeah.
Unlimited.
Yeah. Prabhu is seeing it. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse, crucial verse. The last verses in all chapters are very, very, fundamental. So it's like summarizing and it gives very, very key messages. So let's read this verse. It's one of the memorizing verses, I think. Oh, I have to give you the keys also. Okay. Text number 29. Bhoktaram yajya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram sudhrutam sarva bhutanam jnatva mam shanti yachyate. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So it reminds me of a very wonderful point I heard in recently one lecture. This lecture is given by Radhika Raman Prabhu. He is actually one of the person who has been homeschooled, like, you know, just by studying the Bhagavatam and literature, everything. And he did a PhD on Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. So Jiva Goswami is one of our acharyas. He is expert scholar in our sampradaya. He wrote a lot of literatures. Out of them, primaries are called six sandarbhas, which are actually a kind of a thematic presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Bhagavatam is like set of verses, right? What are the themes and things like that? That is presented in six sandarbhas, all in Sanskrit. And he said that, you know, that the literature is so much in depth. He is a very wonderful person. Like, you know, we will not go into Jiva Goswami's glories. But it was so much in depth that actually he took, for his PhD thesis, he wrote 25 literature entities, basically, or books or whatever you can call, Jiva Goswami. Out of that, six sandarbhas are one entity. So he took, out of six sandarbhas, he took one sandarbha, and in that sandarbha there are like 25 to 30 chapters. He took one chapter. In that chapter there are so many verses, he took three verses. And he said, I got a PhD thesis out of it. So you can imagine, you know, how deep is this literature. So he said, you know, this is a very wonderful literature. So in talking, he has become so profoundly read the literature, he could present that one in very, very simple terms for all of us to understand. So I was very much eager to hear that lectures, and I was hearing that. So in that he was mentioning one point about aham. So Jiva Goswami has to prove the point that when Krishna, there is a section in Bhagavatam where Vishnu speaks Chaturshloki Bhagavatam to Brahma. The four slokas, which is said to be the summary of the whole Bhagavatam in four slokas. In that slokas, he says, no, I exist before everything, I exist now, I exist when everything is annihilated. So I am summarizing, but that's the verse he gives. I existed before everything, I exist now, when everything is happening, I exist after everything is annihilated. So then the point Jiva Goswami is saying is that I is nothing but Supreme Lord. So he proves that, okay, that's a different discussion. So the another point what he was saying, the Prabhu is saying in the class, is that the term aham belongs to Krishna. Nobody else deserves to use the word I. So he was saying in a very nice way, like, if we use the I, at least, you know, 2-3 I's in one sentence, it sounds so ugly. No, I, you know, I did this, I made this, I could, right? It sounds so, you know, very egoistic. But when Krishna uses I, it's so sweet. You know, people glorify Krishna. So he was mentioning this verse about Manmanabhava Madbhakto. That verse, every We can read that verse if you want. It's 9th chapter.
Last verse.
Ninth chapter, last verse, right? No, not last verse.
Yeah, 34th verse. Yeah.
Last verse.
So if you just read the मन्मनाभव मद्भक्तो मध्याजी मां नमस्कुरु मामेव शशि युक्तैवं आत्मानं मत्परायण. So let's focus on, you know, how many times Krishna says me or I. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So there are almost like six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six of them in one sentence. So, but then he said, you know, Krishna, people glorify Krishna and they become attracted to Krishna when Krishna says that. But if he says six times I in one sentence, you know, people will feel like, you know, he's such an egocentric person. So that's why, you know, that reminded me. Krishna says, you know, person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of, it's not egoistic. Krishna is speaking truth. He's not, you know, boasting his ego. Knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Okay, so this verse talks about, it proper termed it as peace formula. You know, if we want to attain peace from pangs of material miseries, so we have threefold miseries, right? What are the threefold miseries?
Self, miseries from other objects, miseries from
material. Okay, so Adi-Bhautik, Adi-Atmik, and Adi-Daivik in that order. So these threefold miseries we are all being struggling with all the time. So in order to attain peace from these miseries, right, what is the solution Krishna is giving? A person is in, one has to be in full consciousness of Krishna and has to act, know Krishna as ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities. There are 3 points here, so we can make a note. First is ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities. That means he is the ultimate supreme enjoyer. Accepting Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. Beneficiary means the person who gets the result. Supreme enjoyer. And the second point is supreme lord of all planets and demigods, means he is a supreme proprietor. And the third one, the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, means he is a supreme friend or supreme well-wisher. So one who accepts Krishna as these three, then one can attain peace from pangs of material miseries. So we'll just dive in deep into each of these. So what does it mean to accept Krishna as an ultimate beneficiary? Oh, couple of more points. So beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities means here sacrifices refers to people who are karmis, who do, you know, karmakanda rituals, they do yagyas. And austerities refer to jnanis, who to attain liberation they do lot of austerities. So Krishna is saying that he is actually the goal of all these people, karmis and jnanis. And similarly, the well-wisher of all living entities is actually the super soul. So Krishna as a super soul, the yogis, the goal is the super soul. So basically Krishna is actually the goal of all the karmis, jnanis and yogis. That's a side point. But supreme enjoyer. So that means whatever sacrifices we do, whatever austerities we do, it should be for Krishna. Very simple. It should not be for, you know, Ganesha or Saraswati or somebody else, or not even for, you know, some king or some minister or somebody else. Like, you know, these politicians do some austerities, right? To get political power or to somebody else and something else. So it should not be like, so it should be the all the sacrifices and austerities we do, the should do only for Krishna, right? And accepting him to be the supreme enjoyer. And then if you want to have peace. And the second one, accept Krishna as the supreme proprietor. So why we should accept Krishna as supreme enjoyer?
He keeps our senses and our things.
No, why means like, does anybody contend with that? Or does anybody challenge that? Why should be Krishna a supreme enjoyer? Why not I? How do we answer that? Because he is actually the proprietor of everything. He owns everything. When somebody owns everything, he deserves the right to enjoy, right? We don't own anything. We are just stealing basically, right? Krishna has given us, of course, out of his mercy, something, you know, some path. But using that, earlier verses, first chapter we covered, right? Using that without offering back to demigods, it becomes, Krishna says, Stena. You are like Stena, you are a thief. In which chapter is it? Third chapter, Karmakanda, where the process is described, right? Krishna says, you offer back to the demigods, then you know, both of you by mutual happiness, you live happily and then you will attain supreme. So, because of the second point, because Krishna is a supreme proprietor, he is a supreme enjoyer. So, we don't deserve the right to enjoy for ourselves, separate from him. Of course, our enjoyment is that it doesn't mean we suffer by serving Krishna. No, that should be clear. Okay, what does it mean? Okay, I should give everything to Krishna, then I don't get anything. So, how do we enjoy? Are we really suffering, being miserable in doing everything for Krishna? Now, how do we enjoy?
Like prasadam, we'll cook everything and we'll offer, but Krishna will give it back to us. We'll enjoy. We are offering to Krishna, but
Krishna will give it back.
Yeah, yes. We are enjoying that.
Yeah. So by serving Krishna, we also get the satisfaction and happiness, because Krishna again serves his devotees back. So it's not that we are sacrificing really, you know, in that sense of giving up something. Then, so he is actually supreme lord of all planets and demigods. So there should not have any doubt about, you know, who is supreme. Is it Brahma? Is it Vishnu? Is it, you know, Ganesha? Is it Shiva? Krishna is declaring very clearly, he is the supreme lord of all planets and demigods. And the third one, he is a supreme well-wishing friend. So, okay, I accept Krishna as supreme enjoyer. And because I know he is a supreme proprietor, so I am trying to do my best to serve everything for him. But in that process, sometimes, you know, I get some knee pain, I get some back pain, or my husband loses my job. No, then I should understand, oh, Krishna is my well-wishing friend. So, he is taking care of me, he is doing whatever is best for me in my Krishna consciousness according to my level of surrender. So, that factor helps us again to stay steady in our process. So, because of these three things, then what will happen if you accept these three things? One actually becomes more and more dedicated to the process of Krishna. Prabhupada called it very simplistically Krishna consciousness. And then when one realizes, so becomes fully Krishna conscious, then one already becomes liberated. So he is no longer under the pangs of material miseries. So these are just the details, but Prabhupada says it very simply in the purport. The formula for peace is full Krishna consciousness. Because all these things are involved in the process which is given to us. We don't have to, you know, keep them apart and get more confused in, you know, logically understanding things. But just to go deep into the verse, we try to, you know, break it apart.
Can you repeat the third point that you explained?
So third point is like, okay, I accept Krishna. I know Krishna is a supreme proprietor. He knows everything. He owns everything. So I'm going to theoretically accept him as a supreme enjoyer. So I try to do my best to make him the enjoyer, and I just get it, you know, whatever I get as a mercy, I accept it. I am following this process of Krishna consciousness. But in that process, some accident happens. You know, so my wife, something happens to my wife, or some I lose my job, something happens to my kid. So all these things, when it happen, I should understand, okay, actually Krishna is my well-wishing friend. Now I am trying to make him as my master, and he is my well-wishing friend, so he is taking care of me. So when we have, this is very crucial actually, this actually helps us to keep the faith. Because when such reversals happens, it's based on, always we will get the test beyond our level. At any stage, it's not that, you know, initially, oh, I'm struggling with this test, you know, this problem or this anartha or this attachment. Maybe after some time when I become stable in Krishna consciousness, you know, I'll not have to struggle so much. Because that struggle is our love for Krishna actually. Right? That struggle that, you know, despite all these obstacles, despite all these disturbances, despite all this, so many attractions around the world, we are trying somehow or the other stay fixed on Krishna, that is our love for Krishna. It may seem struggle, it may seem like we are trying to walk and falling down all the time. But Krishna sees that, okay, no, he is trying to walk towards me. Okay, so we'll read the purport. So actually Prabhupada, in the United Nations, there was a gathering. There was a gathering and Prabhupada made a lecture out of this verse to teach, you know, what's the way to get peace. So he gave a lecture and somehow he couldn't go and deliver it. So later on it was converted into a book and his disciples were talking about it. So Prabhupada was so had so much conviction on Bhagavad Gita. Imagine, United Nations, he wanted to speak about what's the way to attain peace, because everybody is trying to figure out how to get peace. So he said that, you know, okay, this is a peace formula, it's very clear, well, let's follow this, let's all follow this. So he was so, you know, so he had so much faith and so bold. So later on he said, actually, United Nations is trying to attain peace in so many ways, other than what is the crucial thing which Krishna gave. So what's happening is, every year, more flags are increasing. Means what? It's more getting divided, rather than becoming more and more united. So because we are missing the point. So it's individual level, collective level, nation level, to get peace, this is the formula we have to follow. But that's what Krishna is telling very clearly. If we can just make Krishna as a center of our individual lives, or as a home, or as a community, then everything becomes very, very auspicious. So I was just reflecting on this, like, you know, somehow, you know, by Krishna's arrangement, many of the devotees have moved closer. Navya Mataji moved across and Naresh Prabhu, they got a house here. So we are taking advantage of this and we are having, like, you know, some kind of short gatherings together. It's very nice. Hopefully, you know, by mercy we can continue. So I was feeling many times, you know, it's endeavor. Of course it's an endeavor, right? Like somehow, you know, we have plan it out. Of course you are already busy and within that you have to somehow make the time. But it's so joyful, and by doing that, because we are trying to do for pleasing Krishna, everybody gets satisfied. It somehow pleases kids, it pleases the parents, it serves everyone, right? It becomes so, because by serving this route, everybody becomes happy. So that's what I felt. It's endeavor, but there is no failure. We always return back satisfied, happy. Okay, so we'll just read the purport, like from three lines down, the greatest priest formula
is simply this: Lord Krishna is the beneficiary
in all human activities.
In all human activities, men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord, because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereof.
We can pause there. The same thing. So basically, he's saying he's the supreme enjoyer because he is the supreme proprietor. Continuing further, this under the spell of illusion.
Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be the lords of all this world, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these fair facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator of all living entities, including the great demigods or his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness.
No, that we can pause it. So then he was Prabhupada telling living entities why they are trying to enjoy separate from the Lord, because of under the effect of the illusion. But that illusory material nature is actually under the control of the Lord. So this verse, right? 7:14, Krishna says, Daiviyesha Gunamami. No, this material nature is working under my direction. So that's the verse. You can note it down if you want. Then 7 chapter 14 verse. But then these living entities who are struggling, no, they can achieve peace if at all they come to Krishna consciousness. So that's the point Srila Prabhupada is saying. Last line, one can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. Many people, right, these days, you know, they struggle so much, I don't have peace of mind. That's when they start inquiring, actually, they come to temple more often because they don't have peace of mind. So if you want really complete peace, just take up Krishna consciousness steadily and achieve and attain perfection. So another practical thing I was hearing in the lecture related to this verse is that actually, you know, the going deeper into the term of supreme enjoyer. So theoretically, we accept Krishna as supreme enjoyer, but actually practical level, we don't do it. You know, we have certain area, certain field. So you were saying that to the extent we want to enjoy separate from Krishna, to that extent actually we envy Krishna. It seems very simple, but actually it's very, very fundamental actually. We may feel actually, you know, initially when I heard, or rather when I felt, I was sharing one time, right? When I felt I was envious about one devotee, no, I felt I'm, from the heart, I'm trying to give everything to Krishna and serve Krishna. When I heard that, you know, envy towards somebody else is actually a reflection of envy towards Krishna, I felt, do I have so much envy for Krishna, you know, that I cannot stand this person. No, I have so much envy for Krishna, I cannot understand this. We cannot, sometimes we feel, you know, whole life we are putting to serve Krishna. Do I have really that much envy for Krishna? But actually we have so much envy. Because that the extent, to the extent we want to enjoy separate from Him, to that extent we are envious of Him. Because, you know, we are saying, Krishna, you are the supreme enjoyer, I accept. But I also, I'm also, you know, little bit enjoyer. That field, you know, my place, I'm not going to give it to you. This is my region, my domain. In this domain, I am the enjoyer. I'll give rest of the whole world to you. But this small thing, I'll keep it for me. So, you know, to that extent, we are envious. We don't want Krishna to enjoy that one. So, we can keep that in mind practically, you know, whenever we see ourselves enjoying, we can make it as a, you know, we can introspect and see, you know, see, I have so much envy for Krishna. We don't want to, you know, serve Krishna, but I want to enjoy separate from Krishna. So that's what I was telling when, in one little class, right? Like, no, if we can convert that much envy for Krishna to that much love for Krishna, you know, we can see how much more we can love Krishna actually. That shows actually, you know, this also I can give to Krishna. Whenever we feel, you know, I'm enjoying separate from Krishna, I can see immediately, you know, oh, let me give this to Krishna. So I can, like, you know, I was sharing Madhav Mataji these days, you know. So many years gone, still I have so many strong attachments and all, I was sharing. And so, Mataji, what is this? Why are you sharing like this? Like, no, this is so, it feels so embarrassing after some time, you know. It's so ridiculous, and but they're so strong, still you are stuck with that and it's so disgusting. No, but somehow, you know, we are just trying to do the positive things and hope that, you know, we can have the strength to give it up at some point. Okay, so the rest of the purport, Srila Prabhupada is going to summarize this chapter. It's a very nice summary. So we'll read this. Okay. So the fifth chapter.
It's a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge.
Hmm. So here what is saying again, Arjuna's confusion, right? Swami Prabhu, what was Arjuna's confusion?
Arjuna's confusion was to how Karma Yoga is different from, like, inaction, work in inaction. Sorry, work in knowledge is different from inaction.
Okay. So basically, you know, that's what. So he's saying by working in devotional service, one, it's not different from transcendental knowledge, jnana. That's what Krishna is saying. So it's not like jnana means you just sit idle, but you work in full knowledge of that Krishna is the supreme predominator. So continuing further, a pure soul
is the eternal servant of the Lord as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord over it, to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world.
Wow, see, very, very nice, right? Crucial to our whole philosophy. The last three lines, wow, wonderful. Krishna consciousness, however, basically I discussed this many times, right? We are all dealing with matter, we are spirit soul, and but we want to attain the spiritual realm. So how is it possible? By spiritualizing the things, by using it in Krishna service. So that's the one, that's point Prabhupada is saying. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So in the material world, we can spiritualize things by using it in Krishna service and, you know, gradually liberate ourselves. The more one is
advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord
continue. This is the next phrase. Very, very nice.
the Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in their every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger.
We can pause this. This is also very, very nice, right? Everybody got the import of this? Can you all read to yourselves once? Or I will read it. The Lord is not partial toward anyone.
Yeah, right.
Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger.
Yeah, that first sentence. He is partial towards his devotees, Mataji. That's what we are all depending on, right?
We'll come to that in a minute. We'll not discuss that in too much detail. It's not really partiality, it's just reciprocation. That's good, you can count on that.
Okay, but that's the only thing you can count.
We can count. He's not partial in the sense like, you know, okay, I will curse non-devotees and I will, you know, give a lot of mercy to devotees. It's not. In that case also, in this case also, all he is doing is reciprocating according to what people want. Okay, that's the point. We'll not go into that in more detail. If you want, we'll discuss it later. But the point here is, Lord is not partial to anyone means, now we are within the devotee realm, let's say. Within the devotee realm also, Lord is not partial to anyone. Why? Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. That means it's our endeavor that differs, how that makes a difference, how we make progress. So we got it? So if there are two people who come, let's say, to Bhakti Viksha same time, right? But somebody somehow, because of that, he was able to practice everything, take it up very nicely, understand properly and very submissive, and you know, at home also able to chant properly, quickly, no obstacles, whole family is progressing properly, everything, able to put that effort, you can see that person is progressing smoothly, easily, nicely, advancing very nice, very fast. But other person is, maybe somehow or the other not able to put that endeavor, whatever it is, you know, some circumstances or maybe lack of dedication or determination or circumstances, whatever it is, could be the reason. If I am not able to put that effort, then I am not going to get that results and at that advancement. Because see, that's what, you know, everything, he's not partial. It's not like you cannot say Krishna is partial towards that person whom is making advancement and he is impartial towards me. So that's what Prabhupada is saying, you should avoid that. All he is doing is, reciprocating according, everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness. So there is no escape. You cannot sit idle and say, oh, Krishna is showering mercy on me. We have to show our dedication by our determination and our practice in our activities. That's how we show our love for Krishna. Then we can expect the mercy, and that mercy becomes now very, very neutral. Everybody gets that mercy. And we cannot say now, okay, I'm not able to get out of this influence of desire and anger. He's saying, why you're not able to be dedicated in your process then? Got it? Got the point? See, if you are doing your practicing the duties of Krishna consciousness properly, that will help one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. So if you are not doing the first part properly and say, no, I am not able to still do this, I am not able to still do this, means, no, the lacking is ours. We are not doing that fullest, you know, extent of a dedication. So it's very, very, very practical, right? It's not like bhakti means very esoteric term, no, it's very practical. You have to show it in practical. That's why Prabhupada defined it devotional service rather than just devotion, which nobody says what is the definition.
I feel God's mercy is there uniformly everywhere, but when we make this equipment receptive. Yeah,
yes.
Because by doing the service,
yes,
by doing, being routine, being all that, then we are able to receive,
yes,
it. It's not that the
correct
other person,
correct,
is not that, like.
Yeah.
So if I am, even on a day-to-day basis, we can feel it. Some days we feel that, okay, I'm so able to connect. Sometimes I'm not,
yeah,
like, because I'm so disturbed and everything, I'm not able to connect. Within, we can see this so quickly. So the mercy is always there. So it's for me,
yeah,
to receive it.
Yes, correct. Same. So we qualify ourselves to receive by being diligent about our practices. That's the point Prabhupada is saying. Okay.
Then can you just put a few words for this line? Conquer the influence of desire. What?
So this is what the influence of desire and anger is. The desire, this is a verse I wanted to relate to for this verse, I think, but it's becoming late. So you can note down this verse 7.27. That verse is Ichha Desha from, I can read the translation.
Page
339. 7.27. O Sian of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arising from desire and hate. So because of desire and hate, what is the desire? Prabhu, you can note down clearly. The desire is desire to enjoy or desire to become the Lord. And the hate is hate of basically envy of the Lord. Because I am not able to enjoy myself, so I hate the Lord. I hate Lord's position. I envy the Lord. Because of this desire and hate, desire to enjoy myself and hate the Lord, or you know, envy the Lord. Because of these two, we have been put into illusion or dualities. So that's why Prabhupada is saying in this in the purport, one can conquer these two crucial things of desire to enjoy and anger towards the Lord by being diligent about the process of Krishna consciousness. Okay, Prabhu? Okay. Continue.
And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage or Brahma Nirvana.
Yeah. So that means basically he meant steadfast there. One who stands steadfast in Krishna consciousness.
The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life.
Last three lines. That's crucial.
It is the highest perfection. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purpose, the fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the matter of Karma Yoga or action in Krishna consciousness.
Haribo. Okay. So, it's okay, right? Last part is the Prabhupada is saying, you know, whatever you achieve from yoga practice, we are achieving now. So, I just want to read a very nice part of Srila Prabhupada's lecture about this verse. This is the Surrender and to Be book, which is written by Gurujan Prabhu, which gives some context about all the verses.
Which book, Mataji?
It's Surrender and to Me. Overview of Bhagavad Gita. So you want to go, if you want to go deeper into studying Bhagavad Gita or you want to teach somebody, this is very useful. So this is from Srila Prabhupada's lecture on 1968, Bhagavad Gita lecture on this verse. Please, you know, listen very carefully. It's very, very nice. He's commenting on the main, focusing on the point of how Krishna is a well-wishing friend. If we read this, if we don't cry, you know, we should consider ourselves very hard-hearted. Srila Prabhupada expanded upon Suhritam Sarva Bhutanam in a 1968 Bhagavad Gita lecture. This is the lecture. Krishna is always our master. Prabhu, just 2 minutes, can you take them inside? Krishna is always our natural friend. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. Suhridam means Suhrit. There are different names in Sanskrit for different kinds of friends. One friend is called Bandhu, one is called Mitra, and one is called Suhrit. So Krishna says, I am Suhrit, which means such a friend. A friend sincerely wants your happiness. A Suhrit is a real friend. And Mitra is social friendship. Bandhu is official friendship. But Suhrit means one actually desires good for his friend. Sincere friend. Krishna is Suhrit. He is always wishing my good. And he is therefore convincing me, please, you surrender unto me. Just like a father says, my dear boy, why you are acting independently, foolishly you are suffering, just surrender unto me, I shall give you protection. Similarly, Krishna is a friend like a father. He is always asking and is going with me in every type of body. Even if I get the body of a dog, Krishna is always there with me. Even with cats, dogs, hogs or any other lower type of animal, he has no hesitation. He is so friendly that wherever his friend is going, he is always going there. As Paramatma, he is doing friendly activities. He is sending his bona fide servant as spiritual master. He is coming as incarnations and he is coming as a devotee, Lord Chaitanya. He is helping us in so many ways. But we are so foolish that we are not accepting him. Nobody can be better friend than Krishna. But we are so much unfortunate, so much captivated by the external energy that we don't accept Krishna as our friend. So this is lecture on October 14, 1968 in Seattle. Wow. Hare Krishna.
There is summary of Prabhupada lecture.
This transcript of Prabhupada lecture. In the web, prabhupadvani.org, there are lectures as well as transcripts.
Yeah,
the text form. So this that is extracted in this book. Yeah, whenever I think about Krishna's Paramatma's feature, you know, how he's traveling, that immediately, you know, should show us how compassionate Krishna is. So, like so many souls, life after life is just following them wherever they go and just waiting for them to turn back and say, you know, Krishna, no, now I'm done. Can I come to you? Okay, any more questions or comments? So, at least one take home we can take is Krishna is our well-wishing friend. Okay, Jai.